Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that never incentivizes its contributors. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, I'm our partner of propaganda, Steve Haynes.
Hello!
Also joined for the third time this season, guest starring Councillor Bridget Jones. Hello, Bridget.
Hello, Corey.
So, again, this third season has all been about personal responsibility. What we're looking at today, can we get people to take personal responsibility by paying them to do stuff? Should we pay cash to someone to stop smoking? Should we pay cash to someone to lose weight? There's a few other examples as well that I've taken from What Money Can't Buy, which is a Michael Sandel book. One of them is, say, cash for sterilisation. So in America, there was a scheme that I think was piloted here a few years ago of paying heroin addicts £300 if they wanted to be sterilised, so that then drug-addled babies wouldn't be kind of rampaging all over our high streets. Or, for instance, in America, there's cash for green cards. So in 1991, Congress passed a law where if you invest $500,000 in a business that creates 10 jobs for 2 years, you get an automatic green card and you get to go over there.
And then in the UK, we have cash for honours.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, donate a lot of money and get a cushy job in the Lords. Yeah.
Although, you would be so annoyed if you donated all of that money to a company or invested it in the company and they only generated 9 jobs.
So anything as high-fleeting as that to, say, paying cash for thank you notes, so you pay your child $1 for every thank you note they write, which of those do you think are acceptable? Are there any which are more acceptable than others?
I always thought it was a bit wrong that parents paid their kids to pull their own teeth out.
Is this just an Eastbourne thing? That's not something that...
I mean, the tooth fairy.
Yeah.
The tooth fairy is basically paying your kids to not have their teeth in their mouth. Based on incentivisation and economic logic, the kids should then be pulling out all of their teeth so that they get more money for it. That's basic economic theory.
But so is that not just another example to add to the list of why free market economics is bollocks?
I'm not sure you can call it free market economics.
Oh, no, we're talking about six-year-olds here.
That's a separate podcast for us to discuss. In terms of the examples that you actually gave... Some of them are quite interesting. I think that paying to invest in a company which then has to provide jobs for a certain amount of time to gain you access to a green card is potentially an interesting way of doing things. It means that that's someone who's choosing to invest in the business is probably actually there for the medium to the long term rather than just trying to make a quick buck. Others, such as the sterilisation programme, I'm appalled by. You know, sterilisation is a very permanent process in a number of ways. Obviously, there are various ways you can do it, but a lot of it is quite permanent, and this is clearly the indication for it is that it is permanent. And to do that for effectively mutilate someone's body for £300...
Yeah, I think
that's taking advantage of people who are already in a very desperate situation, and I think that's actually very deplorable. Overall, though... I think paying people to try and achieve ends is very determined by the context that you're doing it. Certain areas are likely to be quite effective, I feel. Others, less so. I think part of this also kind of, you need to start by defining what you mean by paying people. Do you literally just mean they're giving cold hard cash, or are we also talking about subsidies in other forms? Because, for instance, I don't believe in the UK we've ever had a situation where you would actively pay someone to go get exercise. But we have had a number of different programmes in the past which would subsidise access to leisure centres, gyms and things like that, so that people can get in there for free or for less money at various different times of the day.
There was a plan mooted, I think, that some people on welfare would have to lose weight to get their benefits. I don't think that went anywhere, though, did it?
No, I don't believe
it. Not to my knowledge, no.
I mean, and again, here's the thing. Is it denial? I wouldn't necessarily say that denial of a benefit and denial of something until you have achieved X goal is the same thing as providing a cash incentive. To me, a cash incentive is this is the baseline position and we're giving you money to do it. If you're kind of if you're going to look at things very narrowly from that to, from that purview, I think you'd probably find that actually would be very potentially quite effective. If you're going to turn around and say that for every month that I don't have a cigarette, I'm going to give you 50 quid, I'm probably much more likely to actually do that because there's actually something feasible that I'm getting in kind for the torment of having to give up the cigarettes and go through the nicotine withdrawal.
You can say that, but actually the studies on paying people to give up smoking, it shows it isn't that effective. I think General Electric, they paid their employees, I think, about $600, maybe $750 to give up smoking. But actually, that didn't lead to a change in attitude and a change in culture. What it found was that actually, 6 months afterwards, those people were smoking again. I think I take the opposite view. I don't really think it's a very good thing. And I think one of those reasons is because if you introduce market values into areas like law, education, health, then it crowds out other values, other intrinsic values. And I think there with health, the intrinsic value is that you ought to be, is changing that culture to get better, which subsidising gyms does, but paying someone to go to a gym doesn't.
This is the interesting thing. We're valuing money above all other things in it when we pay people to do things. So the ultimate payback from quitting smoking is getting years on your life. And the ultimate payback from losing weight or exercise is not dying so young. There's a question for us as a society that we're at the point where that's not enough. We need instant gratification of being paid rather than the hope that in 20 or 30 years' time, we won't be dead.
I think that's where Corey's kind of comment then about kind of the culture shift is actually the most kind of important thing that you do need to look at. And this is, I would absolutely agree, this is where you probably do fall down with cash incentivization. In order to be incentivized to maintain stuff, you need to be consistently getting that gratification from it. So it's not just enough to pay them to stop for a bit, you've got to pay them to maintaining stopping smoking as well, potentially as well. Because otherwise, okay, I've quit smoking now, my payments have stopped, why wouldn't I just take it up again? Because at some point, life's going to get stressful again and I'm just going to go back to it. And there's nothing necessarily there for a long term for me to change my behaviour and change the culture that's around me. However, for short-term things, I think you might actually find that it could be very beneficial. Now, to use an example of this, for young kids, for instance, getting them to adopt specific behaviours and habits can be one of the most effective ways to actually, you know, getting them to pay attention in school, actually getting them to you know, engage with things and in a constructive way. If you could find a way to incentivize them or their parents to actually do it properly, then get them into the habit of it, then arguably you don't necessarily need, they've developed that culture for themselves and that habit for themselves, and you don't need that long-term incentivization. The problem is, I feel like when we're talking about this sort of stuff, we're always talking about adults, and adults are never going to, we're broadly speaking, stuck in our ways. There's a reason why most people fail their New Year's resolutions, whatever they may be. It's because we are creatures of habit, and breaking habits is very, very difficult.
I basically completely disagree. The research that's been done, Roland Fry did some research on different payment methods in education. And what he found was, say, in New York City, there was a scheme where they would pay students to get better test scores. That led to no impact on test results at all. In Washington, there you got paid for attendance and good behaviour. It helped some, but it didn't help many. And it didn't really lead to that change in culture. In Chicago, there was cash for grades again. There was better attendance at school, but there was no impact on grades. And the only one that maybe helps sustain your point is in Dallas, where it was with younger pupils, and they paid, I think, $2 for every book that was read. And that did lead to better reading comprehension ages. However, again, when you talk about the change in culture, if you pay someone, then it just becomes a financial transaction. You don't change the culture, it just becomes you're doing it for that cash. It doesn't change your attitude to it. It becomes cooler to be at school because you might get cash if you're wealthy. It doesn't really change that culture. Also, the introducing market values, it doesn't follow the teachings that free market economics tells us. So, for instance, if you increase the payments for good grades, that doesn't lead to an increase in results.
But also, there's a difference between the book example and the exam example. So a book is a tangible thing. You know when you start it, you know when you finish it, you know when you have completed the job,
there's
and you know you will get your payment. With an exam, it's a gamble. You don't know if you're going to pass or fail that exam. You could study every hour God sends and
still get
still
the wrong
fail
question you don't get.
And
yeah.
still not get your payment. In those examples, it's a gamble. I wonder if there's an element of people not
wanting
seeing
to
the
make
value in that in investing in that gamble with no guaranteed return.
And I think the other thing is that, again, when you look at that, when you break it down of completing reading a book versus not smoking, say, with the books, it's a very tangible thing that you can complete. It's you can know that, for instance, it takes me about a week to read this book, therefore at the end of this month I'm going to have an extra $10, say, if we're using the same amount of money.
Yeah.
Whilst with the smoking, it's that it's something that you then have to kind of keep up forever. It's something which is, there's no end goal with it, because anybody who is an addict of any sort will tell you that you always crave the thing you were addicted to at some point. Even if you've been completely sober, dry, not had a cigarette for years, at some point you'll be walking outside a pub and you'll just see somebody having a fag and you'll be like, I could really do with a cigarette now. Because it's a constant thing rather than something which is, you know, in effect almost a smart goal, just something specific, measurable and achievable, you're always going to struggle with it more. Whilst I think with that book example, it is very specific, and as such it becomes a lot more achievable, and then you can actually incentivize people better with it.
But I think we want pupils to read to get a love of reading and a love of learning to sustain them in life. And I think if you pay someone to read a book, that is taken away. It becomes a financial transaction. In the same way, one of the examples Michael Sandel gives, one of his friends paid his children to write thank you notes, and it's like £1 or $1 for every thank you card they wrote. Now, surely the point of getting your children to write thank you cards is that it's meant to show that it's good to show thanks. It's good to show gratitude for someone giving you a present. Now, you don't get that if you're paid to write a note. Mm. And it's always really obvious if someone's paid to write that thank you card.
I get where you're coming from with that, but I think the core difference between myself and you there is that you're placing much more of a value on the notion behind it, that it's the love of reading that we should be trying to focus on, whilst from my mind, it's the outcome of they're literate. They are actually able to do these things.
But I think it does change the outcome. So, for instance, Bridget doesn't get paid to come on Not Enough Champagne. We don't pay anyone to come on.
Whoa, what am I doing here?
Sorry to...
Yeah, you could have mentioned this earlier.
It is in the waiver we got you to sign before you entered the bunker.
Oh, crap, what else was in there?
It's in the micro dot in the full stop, in the final art, yeah.
You should have checked that.
Yeah, you come, hopefully it's interesting, hopefully entertaining, we might give you some food and some wine afterwards. I think if we were to say, Bridget, we'll pay you £30, do you want to do some podcasts? I think actually it would be a very different podcast that we'd be recording.
Mm.
I think the way that you'd approach it would be very different. And I think the way that we'd approach you being on would be very different.
That I would say when you're dealing with human interaction and relationships, absolutely, I would agree with that. I don't think that applies to books, though. The only interaction there is between you and the book, you and reading it.
It's your attitude to it. The whole problem is that if you pay someone to do something, you introduce a market value to something that shouldn't have a market value. As soon as you do that, it crowds out other extrinsic, other non-market values that are there.
What about the middle ground, which is gamification? So
you're going to have to explain that. Sorry.
So I am sporting a Fitbit. And I am sporting it because a colleague at work thought I was pregnant and I thought, screw this, I'm losing some weight. True story. The way the Fitbit works is it counts my steps all day. As you can see, I've done 9,000 and a bit, according to the blobs on my Fitbit. It's a cheap one. It doesn't give you an actual number, just gives you blobs that are equivalent to so many steps. It counts your steps, but then it syncs to an app on your phone and it gives you rewards for having done certain things. So you can set yourself challenges. I'm in a challenge with my partner where we try to see who can walk the most steps within a week. It pings me things to tell me when he's overtaken me in terms of uploading steps. It gives me badges. So I recently earned my underground badge for walking the distance of the entire London Underground equivalent since I had the Fitbit. My partner's one is fancier. It counts the number of stairs, and he gets things like the Everest badge for climbing stairs equivalent to the height of Everest. But it's the gamification, so it's turning what you're doing into a game. And there's a lot of evidence to show that this works.
Yeah.
You're getting silly rewards. You know, these badges and things on my phone mean nothing, but they are still rewards. There is still a goal to go for. You can still go up levels. There is still something to aim for.
Your life becomes an RPG game, basically.
Yeah, your life becomes a game. And you see the gamification in various other things as well, quite good effect.
Yeah, it's increasingly becoming a very prevalent part of marketing and things like that as part of a strategy to get more and more people to buy your product. You'll ask people to review it, say, but rather than just say review it please because we know you've used it and clearly you like it, you'll then give them access, put them in with the chance to win a voucher for something else. Quite literally down to Amazon vouchers or whatever. The concept is always about basically delivering a reward of some sort, whether it be of a literal value in the form of a prize or almost no real value at all in the form of a badge like that that's on your Fitbit app. And this has been proven to be very, very effective at altering people's behaviour. To me, I don't see too much difference between that and financial incentives.
I think there's a lot of difference. The whole point of the Fitbit and the gamification is to change the culture.
Financial incentives can change culture as well, though.
But isn't there a difference between Bridget's Fitbit and if we were to pay her a tenner every time she walked 10,000 steps a day? There's a massive difference.
Yeah, one's more useful for Bridget.
If the colleague said, well, you are obviously really fat, every time that you walk 10,000 steps, I'll give you a tenner. That's very, very different to creating a culture through a Fitbit of just silly games and silly rewards. And actually, I'd say that's different to your marketing example, where you're trying to get people to leave reviews for prizes, because I think that's quite different, because there's some research that suggests the Amazon reviews of people, of like professional Amazon reviewers who receive free stuff to review, they tend to be different from those who do it off their own bat. So I even see that as being slightly different as well.
There's been debate about Pokemon Go. You guys familiar about...
I did not expect this to go there.
Are you guys familiar with Pokemon Go?
I wanted a nice conversation about market economics and we've ended up on fucking Pokemon Go. Go on, Bridget.
So, for those that aren't aware, Pokemon Go is a real-world RPG game. You walk around with the app open on your phone. The Pokemon will appear as you walk around and you can catch them and you can collect items from Pokestops and you can battle your Pokemon in Pokegyms. And if you're really addicted, you can spend money in the Pokeshop,
buying Pokeballs,
turning it into Pokecoins to buy Pokeballs and other Poke items.
The look on Corey's face is beautiful.
This is the concept of Pokemon Go. So, there have been debates about the effectiveness of Pokemon Go in terms of improving health. Now, to catch Pokemon, you've got to walk. The app knows if you're on a bus or if you're on in Birmingham, the buses go at walking pace anyway.
Yeah.
But they know if you're in a car or another mode of transport and they don't reward you. You have got to walk to find the Pokemon. And walking also earns you other rewards in the game. And there has been debate, there have been stories of people who have lost stones from doing this. The makers have claimed that it's added so many years to life expectancy in so many areas. There's the question as to whether these people were walking anyway in the first place, obviously, and none of the studies have actually filtered any of that out. I actually play it. That's my guilty confession of the day. It is a silly game.
That'll be on the Birmingham front
and
page, right?
I do tomorrow. Actually play it. I'm responsible for children's services. I've got to do something to keep me sane.
I thought you were about to say something to keep up with the kids.
Got to be down with the kids.
So you'll stop dabbing next week.
I don't know what that means. I'm not cool enough.
I'll show you the videos.
Now I'm worried that I said cool enough and it's going to turn out to be drugs or something. Yeah, Pokemon Go is accidentally gamified, the act of walking.
Could you not say that audiobooks have as well, though, and podcasts? So I walk a lot. If there's a really good audiobook I'm listening to, then I'll go on a longer walk. Stop shaking your head. Then I'll go on a walk and I'll listen to the audiobook. Or a friend of ours, he lost a lot of weight because he could listen to podcasts. One of the reasons why when I'm running, and I've managed to lose quite a bit of weight running, I probably wouldn't have run if I didn't have Elvis Costello or Nick Lowe in my head, because
those classic running tracks.
Yeah, What can I say?
Some people work out to Hard House.
No, what's so funny about Peace, Love and Understanding really does get you up that final hill. And I don't think I would have run had I not had an MP3 player with music on it, because running otherwise is pretty damn boring. So I just see that a bit like Pokemon Go. It's something that might encourage you to do it. It's not the market economy kind of
it makes the experience pleasant, yeah, rather than rewarding you with something, yeah, pleasant, yeah, after which means an experience you don't like.
Which, yeah, means it isn't gamification. I mean, it certainly is, you know, of benefit to, you know, getting people to run more, for instance, because it does turn something, you know, that is incredibly dull and boring into something tolerable.
Yeah. It's like if I'm teaching reading at school, you've got to try and do it in a fun, exciting way. And I think it's similar to that. The whole point is you've got to try and trick people.
Do you dress up as the characters and do the voices?
Yeah, you do bits of that or fun activities. That I'm not going to give away all my secrets, not on this podcast. You have to pay me for... No. But it's you've almost got to try and trick... Especially, you know, when I did it, my first teaching placement was in a year one class where they're, you know, 4 or 5 years old. And you've basically got to trick them into their learning. So if you're doing a weights lesson on friction, I spent about an hour turning a cardboard box, we're going to put some weights into push, turning it into a van. So the whole point would be that we're pushing a van to see how far the van will go rather than just a normal box. And so that is gamification of a sort as well. You've got to try and trick pupils into knowing that they're learning. I think that it's basically the same as that, isn't it, Steve?
No.
Okay.
No. Why not? Gamification is specifically about offering a tangible, quote unquote, depending on how you define tangible, reward for taking specific actions. So you've walked X number of miles, you get a badge for it on your app. You've run up so many flights of stairs or walked up so many flights of stairs, you get a badge for that as well. What you're talking about there is...
And then you can go up levels.
Yeah. What you're talking about there is making learning fun and educational and entertaining. That's a good thing, but it's not necessarily gamification unless you're giving the kids a specific reward for each individual milestone within that. So if in pushing that that box van with weights in it or whatever it was, there was a breakdown and you were giving them an award for you have managed to correctly work out this percentage of the questions related to it or something, or understand X percent of the theory behind it, you get a gold star for that. That's gamification. Your gold star chart or a happy smiley face on the chart for the primary school kids, that's gamification.
But again, they're things that change the culture in a way that you can change people's attitudes, you can change the culture so it becomes habit forming. So at the start I needed, you know, Nick Lowe singing Raging Ice to get me up the hill. Now I can go and run without headphones because it's habit forming. In the same way the game, that I'm sure even without a Fitbit, Bridget will probably still walk more now, even without the Fitbit now.
No. I like my badges, and I don't get badges if I'm not wearing the Fitbit.
Habit is defined basically by just taking actions over and over and over and over again. That's all a habit is. It's the thing you do time and time and time again. So to me, if the thing that gets you into the habit is paying for it or a badge or whatever, I don't think there's really much difference to it as long as it works. Now, I can happily admit that in a number of the cases, it will not work, and you listed a number of them earlier, so I'm happy to admit that. But in ones where it can work, I don't see why you would want to remove that as a tool from your chest to help develop those positive habits, just because it's not... doesn't necessarily fit a cultural notion of it.
If you two stop arguing, I'll give you both a gold star.
The problem is that...
But we don't often disagree on that much.
When you're looking... No.
When we do...
Ah, you're enjoying this. That's your incentive. See, we're learning through doing.
Once you bring money into it, though, it becomes a financial transaction. And sometimes that's okay. Like, free market economics in terms of supply and demand... And if the price goes up, then people will buy less of it, all that kind of stuff. That applies to things like televisions, and it applies to things like books, it applies to things like tomatoes. If the television is more expensive, that generally means it's a better television. That works in terms of free market economics. As I've already said, paying people to do things it doesn't follow a market transaction. If you give someone a bigger financial incentive, that doesn't mean that they'll perform better at it. And it's the same. And so when we start applying market reasoning to sex, to education, to wealth, to health, I think there are some ways of valuing goods, they are better than others. And actually, you can't just put a monetary value on health and education. Market values don't work there. And the thing is, this has changed in economics over the past 50 or 60 years. Adam Smith didn't write about incentives. He wrote about the invisible hand of the market. The whole point, is that, and in his theory of moral sentiments as well that he wrote, the whole point is that you don't need, that financial incentives aren't everything. It's about morality as well. Gary Becker wrote about shadow prices. So this idea of that externalities, basically. So if you're thinking about divorcing your wife or your husband, there are other costs you think about, like the cost of family breakdown, the cost of mental health, all that kind of thing.
Having to divide the friends up.
And yeah, exactly. Whereas what this is, it's, that's changed now. So like books like Freakonomics or books like Tim Harford's The Logic of Life, they try and make out that economics is all about the study of incentives, and it's all about incentivizing people through monetary transactions. And I think what that misses is that when you bring money into it, that crowds out other motives.
For me, policy always has to have an outcome in mind, and that outcome is what it needs to be measured by. And if you can do it without having to pay people, then brilliant. Let's do that. There are certainly ways for like getting people running and moving and things like that, and losing weight. But you can definitely do that. But at the same time, I would not want to remove a potential tool from the chest I do not put an inherent value on certain items just because, you know, they are conceived as good. The outcome tends to be what actually matters.
I think you should, though, for the same reason that if we paid Bridget to come on the show, it would be a very different podcast and it would be approached very differently. It's exactly the same if you're trying to pay someone to stop smoking.
And I would agree with that for when you're dealing with relationships between people. I do not believe that exists as a thing when you're just talking about your own individual behaviour.
So have we solved anything today?
No.
We finally had a podcast and we have a proper argument. I know. We've actually had that. So that's quite useful. We'll find a subject we both agree on next week. We'll talk about Trump or Brexit or something.
Almost conventional. Certainly.
Yeah. Our theme tune is Plucky Good Times by Dave Deppert. That's available on freemusicarchive.org. He's not paid for that. He does that. It's not a monetary transaction. James Cramp designed our logo for free. He also did not accept payment because he's an awesome human being. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cramp. You can follow me for Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter for free at Paperback Writer.
You can follow me on at Centre Radical.
But he will charge.
I will charge, absolutely, per tweet. So every tweet you see, I will charge you like half a penny.
And if you can work out how to spell my name, you can follow me at Bridget Jones on Twitter.
We'll be back next week. Speak to you then.
Bye.